So thank you, Diane Tor, and thank you, Hans Scheil, for the possibility to have an interview with you. Maybe, Diane, you tell us shortly about your work in general.
Well, I'm a performance artist, and I've been working for about 30 years. Started off in New York in 1976, and I developed particular ideas in performance around gender and sexuality, and that began with performances in 81, 82, all through the 80s, 90s. And the thing that I became most known for are my Man for a Day workshops, which pioneered a drag king culture in Europe and elsewhere, and it's taken me around the globe. And now I teach gender as performance, so that it's not just women, it's really for anybody, and that's what I've been doing here at the Brut Theatre.
Well, Hans and you met in New York, right? So in the 1980s? And my question would be how both of you, and especially you, Diane, in your workshops, experience also a change of perception in gender, and how the also the expectation maybe in the 1970s and 1980s were on the development of how gender would develop in general and in Western society. And if you look back, how it has developed, that would be of interest.
Well, I'd say that the gender thing really took off in the 90s. And before that, in the 70s and 80s, and you did have men dressing up like glam rock, you know, putting on makeup and that kind of thing. And there's always been women cross-dressing, especially in the lesbian community, but a lot of vaudeville artists and so on. But I think that gender really hit the idea of exploring gender in the 90s. And that was the hiatus. That was really the place when people were so involved with thinking about what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman, and is it possible to be an androgyne, and so on. And I think with that swell of knowledge that's been acquired through the research that's been done in the 90s, in Europe and the United States, well, everywhere actually, I think it's influenced a lot how people perceive themselves and each other. And I don't know if that was such an issue. I don't know if people really were so involved. And for me, I mean, in thinking about gender, for me, a lot of ideas came from feminism and growing up with two elder brothers and seeing how they got treated differently from me and, you know, having a certain amount of anger around that. And feminism certainly helped me to have an analysis, you know. So I'd say that a lot of my perceptions have been developed through feminism.
Yeah, with me, yes, the thing, as you said, in the 90s, all that happened with the drag kings and also then with the transgender thing. And I was in London in 1995 when there was the Gay and Lesbian Film Festival in London. And Judith Jack Halberstam was giving this lecture on female masculinity. She also has that book out. And before her lecture was this drag king competition. And the drag king competitions were already known and were already practiced in California, I think, so definitely in the States. And so 95, there was one in London at the Gay Lesbian Film Festival. And we were just working on the film on Dandy Dust, where there were lots of people, queer people, lesbians, gay men, and so forth, taking part. And we thought, oh, shall we take part? And then I thought, at first I thought, oh no, I'm not a drag king, because I'm not butch. And I always thought drag king is someone who is quite butch, but also in a certain kind of, often, you know, with jeans or with leather. And then there was also this this singing thing with a, like almost like karaoke. There was a lot of karaoke singing, like reinterpreting male singers. And but then I came up with a special effects performance of a man who is hanging himself, and then the trousers fall down, and instead of a penis I have a finger, and the finger goes up because I have it on a transparent thread, and so forth. So I had did a special effect performance, and I actually won because I think I stole the attention in that way. So yes, and It also, probably in that year even, I learned to know Jody Jones and Stafford, who were the first people who I met who were transgender. And so all that started as well in the 90s.
But coming back to mainstream maybe expectations and whom you meet, Diane, also in your workshops, I mean, hasn't the behavior which is inscribed into a certain gender or which is genderized behavior, hasn't that changed? Because, for example, in the 1995, I think, BBC documentation on your work, they said that anyway, everything's going to be more androgynous and it's impossible. It will be impossible in future to know what is genderized and what not, and which movements mimic or whatever is inscribed into either femininity or masculinity. And did you actually see this, or did you perceive this?
I started teaching the Drag King workshop, as it was called, in 1990, and I was doing that with a female-to-male transsexual called Johnny Science. And we started off in New York at Annie Sprinkle's Salon. And at that time, the people that attended were a very big variety of people. There were academics, who, one woman who was 68. There were people who were doing it for reasons of sexual frisson. They were going to meet their partner afterwards, whether it was a man or whether it was a woman. And then there were also people who had a certain amount of gender dysphoria, who really didn't feel like they belonged in the body they were in. And the workshop was, in fact, a stepping stone for some of them to then go on and have gender reassignment surgery or not, as the case may be. So there were also other reasons that people did the workshop, and you can find out more by reading my book, Sex, Drag, and Male Roles, Investigating Genderist Performance. That's University of Michigan Press, and that book just came out last year, co-authored by Professor Stephen Bottoms from University of Leeds. And I think what happened, because as a result of doing this workshop, I got an amazing amount of media attention, starting with the Washington Post article in 1993. It was a huge article. And then all these TV shows that wanted me to come on. And everywhere I went after that, there was a lot of media coverage. In November 94, I was in Amsterdam, and somebody from The Independent in London, Julie Wheelwright, who wrote this great book, Amazons and Military Maids, she came and she wanted to do the workshop. She wrote about it for The Independent. And then she brought me to the ICA in London in 94, November 94. She did a talk, and I also did a transformation workshop. And so that for me was the sort of beginning of an experience of doing a lot of work in Europe, you know, in Holland. Started off in Amsterdam, and then in 95, I went to Berlin, and I got lots of invitations to perform and do workshops at different festivals. And that also resulted in a lot of media attention, too. But, of course, it's not just me. This was happening to Stafford, for instance, also in the West Coast. He was... and then, of course, Venus Boys came out in 2002. And I think what has happened is that people don't think it's weird to maybe experiment with gender anymore. And at the beginning, I think people were afraid and they had a lot of apprehension. And I do remember these early meetings at Annie Sprinkle's house where people would come who were so confused about who they were, you know, whether they were male, whether they were female. you know, they thought that they were neither. And I mean, how do any of us know who we are, really? I mean, what is gender? And it's something that's completely made up. And so, of course, people are going to be confused. You know, I'm still confused. And, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. So, but at the same time, you know, you have a sense of who you are that is developed over time. And it doesn't necessarily have to be male or female. It's just you, you know. So I do think that people have a greater awareness now, and there is maybe a lot more tolerance for the trans community, for instance. I mean, they had to fight such a fight to be visible. And it wasn't just with the straight community. It was with the lesbian gay community as well. I said, certainly in the United States, that happened. And it was really... You know, after a long battle, and there were certain very strong groups like Transsexual Menace, who were just really, really tough, and they went to demonstrations and just demanded to be heard. You know, so and I think it was hard for the lesbian gay community to accept trans at the beginning. So that's another kind of stepping stone, if you like. You know, that there is LGBT now. Where there wasn't. I mean, it's probably hard for people to even imagine that the time when the transsexuals, transgender people were not included in the queer community. But, you know, that is the, you know, we've come that much further on. We take it for granted, you know, but actually that was a hard battle. And actually I think that film Boys Don't Cry also helped. Certainly a lot of people were very shocked with that film. But you can't forget that the main character was a martyr, basically, to the transsexual community.
Hans, how did you experience the change in perception of gender? For example, Vivi talked, or Diane talked now about how it happened in the US and also in other English-speaking countries. But how did you experience it in Austria, if we come back to a local level? Because I always feel that, especially in German-speaking countries, Diane, you maybe also experienced this in Berlin, it's like always a few years behind what has happened in English-speaking countries or in the Anglo-American cultural circle.
I don't know if I can really talk about Vienna so well, because I was in London when it all happened, and here I'm not really so in touch with transgender or trans community. I mean, I know some people, but otherwise, because now here, yes, it is already different. And as I'm teaching at the Academy of Fine Arts, I have a few people in the class who already know what is what, and they already play with gender. And I mean, like Crazy Bitch in the Cave, Patrick Weber, who is, when you see him, you know, in the street, he's a very shy man. And when you see him on stage, he's this very, very loud and amazing woman singer, you know. And
Especially as Diane mentioned, we now have LGB or even IT, but and it's every day for the next generation who are now about, let's say, 15 to 25 or something. But these are very recent developments. And especially if you look at the long development of feminism, or as we read it now, beginning in the 1970s, and forgetting everything that has happened in the 1920s and the late 19th century and so on. Why did it take so long to give a voice also to other genders outside of what we know as sexed genders?
I think the whole experience of being a certain gender is a very personal one, and also very subjective. So somebody who feels something differently, like being intersexed or trans, it's not our experience. You know, those of us that are considered male or female, we don't have that experience. And so there is perhaps a lack of empathy. And I think that was definitely true in the United States. And, you know, that lack of empathy also got translated into funding. You know, if the trans community are going to need funds to have a community and to have a culture, I think the lesbian gay community felt that some of the funds were going to be taken from them. So, I mean, that was my perception anyway. There was a financial issue as well. Because the lesbian gay community have fought very hard to establish themselves within the mainstream culture and to have cultural support for lesbian gay work. And so the trans community and the, well, intersex is a whole other story, but the trans community coming along is definitely a threat, you know. So I think that's part of it. But I also think there's this subjective thing that we don't really know what it is to be intersexed or to be trans, you know. And I think that does affect, you know, that's probably why, one of the reasons it's taken so long, you know.
Yeah, and also I think it took so long and it will still take a long time for gender to really be seen as something that is a construction, and where we can take part in that construction is that if you work your whole life to construct your gender and your surroundings, the people who surround you, help you construct to be either a woman or a man. And that's hard work as well, and especially hard work for some people who are not so sure if they really fit into this one model. If you worked so hard on that and suddenly someone comes along and says, oh, just forget it, you know, it's like you don't have to be a man, you don't have to be a woman, you can just play around and just or even be transgender and be somewhere in between or both and or neither, then I think it's scary. It's because then, you know, you wonder, who am I? Yes, then the whole question of who am I comes along, if I'm suddenly not the woman who I thought I am or the man who I thought I am. And also I think it has to do with sexuality as well, because in that moment when, let's say, a person who was a woman for a long time and then suddenly starts to experiment with being a man, in that moment, if she was straight before, if she was heterosexual before, then suddenly she would be a lesbian. She would be a gay man if she was playing with a male role and would be attracted to males. And yes, and in that way, suddenly you get into this territory that used to be called perversion. You know, everything that was not heterosexual was called a perversion. And that's the other thing, because we all around us, there are these images and films and television where we are being shown what is a normal sexuality and how people behave when they are attracted to each other or when they have sex with each other, or what they do if they are flirting, da 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 da, and all that is starting to totally crumble.
One of the workshop participants said, and I thought this was interesting to you, Dan, that coming from a very feminine, gay behavior, that he wanted to become or understand alpha males, which I thought is really interesting also now what you have said. So it's sudden playing or trying to be mainstream somehow, or to understand these normative standards, which he thinks are still applicable. The other question that would be, what is the need of the workshop for you today, 35 years later? What do you see that people are still needing this workshop for? If so much has changed, then what are the new needs maybe that are still or pressing somehow?
Well, the first time a man asked to do my workshop, the workshop stopped being called Drag King. I started calling it Man for a Day, because Drag King came to mean something else, just people, women putting on men's makeup and men's clothes and lip syncing. It's kind of like drag queens, but that's not what I was doing and not what interested me, really. I was interested in transformation and how a person could transform from one gender to another. and not in a pastiche kind of way, but really go through this transformation. And so a man who was very girly, I mean, more girly than any woman I'd met, with all the fluttering eyelids and spinning on a dime kind of behavior. And so he really wanted to learn how to be a man because he wanted to go to business school at MIT, and they wouldn't give him any credibility as a girly man. And he was, his job at that time was doing these in-house videos for Specsavers, where he could explain to the other retail staff how to sell these spectacles, you know, so it was full of expression. But he didn't want to do that forever, and he really wanted to go into business. And it was a life choice, if you like. So I took him in, and he did the workshop, and I saw him a year later, and he did the workshop again. He had transformed. He had become, he'd lost all his girliness, unfortunately. He became the straight guy. So it's obvious that in the mainstream, they're not going to accept somebody, a guy who's looking too, way too effeminate, if you like. I mean, it's just not going to be acceptable. And there are still these standards that you, in the business world, you know, in mainstream, that are expected to cooperate with. You know, as a woman, you have to look a certain way if you want to be given respect. And the whole idea of the possibility of alternatives is perhaps okay for people who are artists or who are involved in self-expression in some way, or, you know, whatever that is, whether it's singing or whatever. But for everybody else, you know, conformity is where it's at, you know, and it's becoming even more so at this point, horribly so. And it's, I can see that in England and in London, you know, it's like the gay culture practically doesn't exist. I mean, it does, but not anything like it did, you know, and it's not like gay culture is being celebrated to the same extent that it once was. And I just wonder, you know, what's going to happen, you know, how things are going to develop now. Because even though we have this awareness, there is this pendulum swing in the other direction. I think that there will always be an appeal, you know, what would I be like if? And I think that's something everybody has at some point or other. You know, what if I'd been born a boy? What if I'd been born an intersex? What if I'd been born trans? You know, what kind of person would I become? And so that curiosity leads people to experimentation. And for a lot of people, they maybe just do that on their own. And then they found out that I'm teaching this gender as performance workshop or man for a day workshop, and they sign up for that. But I do think that gender will always be an issue because our society divides people in binary. You know, we're involved in this gender binary that is just the way that our society functions, you know. And I don't know if any real attack has been made. Perhaps in some quarters, definitely, there has been a difference. But the mainstream is just so strong, that mainstream ideas about gender.
Yes, and one reason why it is also so difficult to get out of this binary, I mean, there's a few reasons, but one reason is also language, because you always have to decide if you say he or she to someone. And it's even with me, who I'm so used to, you know, I'm so transgender myself. I'm not a woman, I'm not a man. But still, it's if I don't know, if I see a person, and if, is that now a he or a she? Because if I talk to you about her and suddenly you say him, I'm like, oh, you say him about this person. I say her, but who is wrong? I always think who is wrong. Like with Jakob, you know, Jakob Lena Knebel, who she says, or she doesn't mind if she is a he or a she. So when I say Jakob, I often say he. And then someone who looks at me looks and thinks, oh, Jakob is a he. Maybe I should say he. But then suddenly I say she again, and then people get really insecure about what is it now? Is it a he or a she now?
Yeah. Well, I just want to correct something I said earlier, because I referred to Brandon Tina, I think, as a she. I think I might have done.
Yeah.
I didn't. I got it right. Okay. But I think that people probably do think about Brandon-Tina as, because Brandon-Tina was born with female genitalia. So there's this assumption that Brandon-Tina must be a female. And so I think that film, Boys Don't Cry, maybe really did help more than any other mainstream film to bring this issue of gender consciousness into the mainstream. And I think also that issue of pronouns, who's a he, who's a she, is also problematic too. But if you look at any form, it's always MF. There's no space for other. You know, and so you immediately get defined. And, you know, a lot of us, we just want an easy life. Okay, I'll fill up the form. I'll be a male for today if you want. I'll be a female for whatever, you know. But actually, you know, if you're neither one or the other, or you don't feel like you fit into the gender binary, there is no space for you.
Okay, maybe you already know, but in the German language, they used to have, like, for the last 10 years almost, you had to use, like, for example, in teachers, so you had Lehrer and then capital I innen, so it's Lehrerinnen, so also it's not only male but also female. And now this is new and also part of the academy politics where we are teaching. It's now either Lehrende, so it's neutral. Or you, instead of, if you can't do the neutral, you use no longer the capital I to, but you have an underscore. So it's like Lehrer, and then it's underscore, and then it's a gap, and then you have small innen. So that whoever doesn't fit into male or female can be included as well. But this is completely new since last year, yeah.
Don't you think that Germany, or just maybe German-speaking countries, I don't know, don't you think they're maybe always ahead of their time? You talk about them being behind the time, but they always catch up, and they do things much more thoroughly. You know, that's what I find, anyway. I mean, in the UK, they go, oh, that's a great idea. And then the following year, it's like, oh, we did that already. You know, we've already done feminism. Oh, we did drag kings, you know. Whereas in Germany, they investigate. They challenge you. I mean, I get challenged in Germany constantly. They don't let me get away with anything, you know. And I better have done my reading when I go there as well, to Berlin or whatever. Because there's also new books coming out all the time. And there is a film coming out called Man for a Day, which is based on this workshop by a German filmmaker. It's a feature film, Katharina Peters. It'll be probably premiering at the Leipzig Doc Festival. And it's this, I think it's in October or November this year. But, you know, so she went to ZDF and Medien Board and Scottish Screen and got joint funding to make this feature film. And it wasn't just boom, boom, boom. It took a while to do that. But she really challenged me. I had to work with 12 women, only one of whom was a lesbian, and from all these different ethnicities, backgrounds. It was tough. It was really tough. And, you know, a lot of those women never even thought about whether they'd want to be men for a day, you know. So it was a very challenging film. I'm scared. I don't know how it's going to turn out. But that's what I mean. You know, in Germany, I always get, you know, put on the line. It's like, you know, you can bluff your way in other places, but not in Germany, you know. So thank goodness that they pay attention to things like that in the language. And I have a feeling that if anything is going to change in language, it will probably come from Germany. It will come from, I mean, that's just my bias, but that's been my experience.
Thank you, Diane. Thank you, Hans.